Welcome to the Sermon Podcast from Beaver Parish Church.
The readings this morning are going to come from a selection of verses, and Alan, I think, is probably going to capture them for us on the screen. So I'm just going to read the verses. One of those days, Jesus went out to a mountainside to pray and spent the night praying to God. When Jesus heard what had happened, he withdrew by boat privately to a solitary place. After Jesus had dismissed them, he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. Later that night, he was there alone. Very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went off to a solitary place where he prayed. And from Mark, then, because so many people were coming and going that they did not even have a chance to eat, he said to them, "Come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest." But Jesus often withdrew to lonely places and prayed. Then Jesus went with his disciples to a place called Gethsemane, and he said to them, "Sit here while I go over there and pray." And finally, from Psalm 46, he says, "Be still and know that I am God."
David, yeah. When you're at an event, whether it's a church service or the theatre or a production in school or some other thing, and it feels like nothing's happening, you begin to sense a growing tension in the crowd of, has somebody forgotten something? Has somebody not turned up? What's meant to be going on? The thought of it just being still and nobody doing anything makes us anxious, because we like to know what's next. What are we doing? Where are we in the program? How soon are we getting home? Or whatever it is that's going through our minds. And yet, when we read of those little snippets out of the Gospels, apart from that last verse, there's something about Jesus' pattern of life and cycle of life that he withdraws to these still, quiet places to be on his own. And that's what we're thinking about today, is solitude. The idea of being on your own and the positive possibility that that could be in our lives. And my reaction to that sense of trying to find a place of solitude or of stillness like that is that, but how could I possibly fit all that into a busy life? When you've got so much to do and so many things to think about, why would you want to be wasting time doing what looks like nothing? Just doing nothing. And then it occurred to me this week, as I was thinking about this, that Jesus has 3 years to change the history of the world. Now, that's quite a lot to achieve in 3 years. So if you think of a three-year spell in work, or 3 years with, if you're a teacher, with a class of pupils, or 3 years in your business life as part of your five-year plan or your 10-year plan or something, 3 years passes very, very quickly. And Jesus has to change the whole world, the whole history of the world. Sorry, he doesn't change the whole world, but he changes the history of the world and the future of the world in 3 years. And part of it is achieved by that, by what looks like doing nothing. Now, he's obviously not doing nothing, but taking the time for solitude seems to be part of how you achieve the greatest things. So rather than trying to think of how could I squeeze more in, maybe we need to be thinking about how do I squeeze some more out so that there's more space and more solitude. This week, I'll come back to what I did this week, but let me say that for the last couple of years of my mum's life, my sister looked after her all the time, but on Mondays and Thursday afternoons, we took my mum from her day centre around about 3:30, that sort of time, and then brought her to the rectory, and we kept her over tea time, and then kept her and returned her back to my sister for bedtime. And then we did Saturdays as well. But Mondays and Thursdays were a wee bit more pressurized because those were days when there was lots of stuff happening, lots of things going on, and sometimes it was incredibly difficult. We had to ring the day center and say, could you hang on to her for 20 minutes? We're not going to get there in time, or however it was. We eventually organized a carer who very kindly was on the end of a phone any time to pick my mum up, and we got into a wee pattern that Alison eventually joined in with as well, of my mum coming to Forestside and having a wee bun and a cup of tea in Forestside, and then me picking her up there. But it was just like you could imagine, full of tension and activity and everything else. And because it was so busy getting her out of the day centre, into the car, into Forestside, out of the car, into Forestside, back into the car and everything, I decided that we need to find somewhere to not have to keep getting her in and out of the car. So our wee place became, if you're up at the other end of Beaver Drive near the exit closest to Forestside, if you come in to Beaver Drive there from the carriageway and go down and take the first right down a wee lane, it takes you to where Joanne works. It takes you to the car park in the forest. And that became that on a Monday and a Thursday afternoon. Sitting in the car park, because if you get the right spot, you're looking out from up high across the whole of the forest and the Lagan Valley. And my mum just loved sitting there. And we put on the radio, and she went for a wee nap. And sometimes I did too. Okay. Had a wee nap. But a lot of the times, you were able to turn the radio down just a wee bit, and I could read or do anything else like that I wanted, because you had an hour where it just seemed appropriate to just sit in the car. Plus, the best thing ever was about to happen. Went straight from there to the square to get a fish supper. And we shared that on Thursday. We did Slimming World Tea on Mondays. You'd have given anything for a fish supper by the time you finished one of those meals. It's a rare gift of Slimming Worlds, how they've managed to extract all the flavour out of everything. It's just incredible. But there you go. So, solitude. That looks wonderful. And I bet you've all got moments in your life where you remember standing on the top of Slievedonnard or the Cave Hill, or standing on an empty beach in Donegal, or any of those places where you suddenly find you didn't plan it, but suddenly there's no one here. It's peaceful. It's calm. And very often the emotion of that, we interpret as the closeness of God to us. And I think at those moments, there is a closeness of God. And that's exactly what Jesus was after. It's like if you can extract from your life, maybe a bit like Slimming World, if you can extract all the other things that are battering their way into our lives, in those moments of stillness and solitude, maybe we become just a wee bit more aware of the divine presence around us, because we're not being battered by all the other things. But the wee course that we're following is an ordinary day with Jesus. Not that. You can't do that every day. At least, I haven't the energy to get to the top of the Cave Hill every day, or whatever. So those places aren't readily available to us. So, is it words next, Alan? Yeah? Can we fire a wee set of words up? I did a wee Google search, and the word solitude came up with all these words. Loneliness, solitude, desolation, solitary, seclusion, isolation, alone, quiet, secluded, forlorn, stillness, remote. And you look at all of those words, and you think, some of those aren't really what I'm looking for. I don't want desolation and secluded and forlorn and isolation. Those are negative things about our lives. But if Alan does a wee bit of magic, something has moved there. Loneliness, if you take the L off, becomes oneliness. Isn't that a lovely word? Oneliness. Just being a one on your own. Isolation. Solitude is something different. Desolation. Quiet and quiet should be there. Forlorn should be over there. Not a worry. But the left-hand side are the negative things we don't want. You don't want to be isolated from everybody. But yet at times we want that stillness and that sense of oneliness that allows us to sense God very close to us. Now, let's switch to another picture because it can't all be mountaintops. And I thought that was brilliant. It reminded me of Schindler's List. Do you remember when the crowds of people are out? It was a black and white movie, and the crowds are all out in the streets being herded onto trains in that awful situation that happened during, you know, the late 30s and into the Second World War. But in lots of those pictures of the crowds being herded down the streets, there was one little figure in a red overcoat, a little girl. And part of the message of Schindler's List was that the one is important to Schindler. And deeper than that, what I think Spielberg was trying to share with us is that the one is important to God. And of course, you know that from Jesus' stories when he told us about what God's heart's like. God's heart is like when one sheep gets lost. God forgets, sets all the others aside to look for the one. When the one coin gets lost, the woman sets everything aside to find the one. When the one child is lost, God's heart is to watch and to wait and to hope for the one. A bit like the Schindler's List message. And this woman, isn't she wonderful? Because in the background, you can see what looks like people moving and everything else. If you look up, you can't see it quite there, but I think the top of the table has water on it, has puddles on it, like it's raining, and of course the hood up would seem to indicate that as well. But there's something about, with everything else going on around her, this woman has decided, I just want to sit in the midst of it all. Now, I'm wondering what she's looking at or what she's thinking. Yeah, well, you could imagine forever what she's looking at, and we've no idea. But she's found some solitude in the middle of an ordinary day. Sitting on a wet chair outside a restaurant where nobody else wants to sit down. But she's found a wee place where there's solitude. Wouldn't it be lovely if she's praying for her family? Or praying about that traffic warden who's putting a ticket on her car. Right. I said, Lord, would you knock him or her down? I'm sure she's not praying that. But anyway, but just that moment in the busyness of the day when she's decided, I could be all alone, even in this busy street. You see, when we think back to what Peter read us, one of those days Jesus went up a mountainside and spent the night praying to God. When Jesus heard what had happened, he withdrew by boat privately to a solitary place. After Jesus had dismissed them, he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. Very early in the morning, when it was still dark, he got up and left the house and went to a solitary place. Was it the back garden? Then, because so many people were coming and going that they didn't even have a chance to eat, he said, come with me by yourselves to a quiet place. But Jesus often withdrew to lonely places and prayed. And even on the worst night of his life, he went to a place called Gethsemane. And he took his disciples away from the busyness of the festival in the city where they were eating their meal, took them to a garden, and then stopped them and said, let me go on to a place all of my own. And in those moments of oneliness, Jesus finds himself able to connect with God in a way that is restoring and strengthening. It's not the panic prayers of on your rush to an interview or in the middle of work when it all feels like it's going wrong and you're crying out, Lord, would you help me? And would you make them all sit down? Would you make this thing work? Would you make this computer start again? Or whatever. It's not those panic things. It's a moment with a big sigh and let the peace begin to flow and settle in us again. in these moments of loneliness. So, because I knew the subject this week, I decided I ought to prepare my sermon for you in a place of loneliness. And you know where I went? And it wasn't very far away, and it was in the middle of everything else that happens. I went back to the car park at the other end of Beaver Drive and sat in the wee space where me and my mum used to sit and listen to the radio and have a wee nap. And I got my Bible and the book and sat there and stared out over the forest and was amazed at the sense of loneliness found in the middle of all of this, all around us. And I prepared this sitting there for a couple of hours, just staring out across the fields and the forest and Lagan Valley and everything else, and discovered loneliness can be found in the middle of everything, just like this woman finds this moment of loneliness in the middle of it all. So, how are we going to do this? What's the next one, Alan? Let's put this up. Okay. So, three wee things I'd like us just to think about. One is, if you're going to think about how could I find solitude, I think maybe it's already there, and all we need to do is redeem the place, which was, and I knew I was going to put this up on the screen, which is why I went back to that wee car park, because I've redeemed the wee place. You'll now, well, yes, if you're ever down there, you might see my car occasionally sitting, because that would be a place. Redeem a place. What about redeem the bus on the way to work? Redeem the garden late at night. Redeem a chair. In our house, we have a wee bit more room in the rectory probably than most people have in their homes, but we've got a chair on the landing, and if you're sitting on it, that's the reading chair. Yeah. Redeem a lunchtime. Redeem a moment when you decide I'm not going to talk for the next hour, even though you're in work and with everybody else. Maybe actually decide to set aside some time. When you have no time left for anything, choose to set aside some time when you actually go on a retreat or a mountaintop. And redeem a place. And I think the place, in some ways, needs to become a wee bit regular so that it's not a new place. You immediately feel close to God by being there. It's a place that you can feel at peace in, and you know what happens around you, so you're not disturbed by all the things, but this could be a regular place where you find a sense of solitude, even in the midst of all sorts of activity. The second thing is, what's the purpose of all of this? I just came across this week, Shechem, which was a place where Abraham built an altar way, way back, thousands of years ago. But I was reading something about it that I'd never heard before. It just leapt out when I was doing a wee bit of searching on Google for different thoughts and ideas about all of this. Apparently, the ancient city of Shechem has a number of underground rivers flowing under it. But you would never know they're there until the middle of the night. And if you waken up in the middle of the night and listen, you'll hear water running. Is that a fascinating possibility? That there's rivers and life flowing underneath that city, but you never hear it because of the traffic and the noise and the talking. Actually, in fact, if you go out that door and down to the bottom grass, there's a manhole cover, and if you stand on it, you'll hear rivers running. Okay, and it is amazing, even when there's no apparent rain or anything, there is a gushing something running down there. Maybe this is how we're going to make our millions. Beaver water. Fizzy water from beaver is pouring down there. But you only hear it when you come over close. Wouldn't you hate to go through life and the rivers of God have been flowing in our lives and under our lives and around us all the time, and we've never heard them, or we keep missing them because of the noise and the activity? And maybe we need to find a Shechem and stop long enough to begin to hear the whisper of the rivers of God. I've got down here turning off the laptop. Somebody years ago told me that if you keep your laptop on and work on it day after day after day, you've moved things around in it. And slowly but surely you're clogging it all up. And in actual fact, you need to turn it off every 3 or 4 days. Actually close it all down. And what happens in the process of closing it down is it actually puts everything back where it was. Stores everything, puts things away. And when you open it up again, you can't see it because it looks the same as it was when you put it away. But inside, it has resettled itself back into the best working way. And I think that's what this is about. It's pausing long enough for the things that have all got muddled up to begin to settle back where God had put them. So here's the pattern, the very last thing. And I want to give you something to do. You see on the wall, there's one here, one here, one on the door, one on the back wall, one on the door. If you go out to the family centre, they're out in the foyer. If you go out to the family centre, they're stuck on the walls as well. I want you, before you go home, to go up to one of those and take a photograph of it. Yeah, if you can. If you don't have a phone that takes a photograph, there are some printed copies, not very many, on little postcards out in both foyers. Please take one home. And here's what it says. And I want to, it's like a wee challenge. I want you to, I don't want to get up on Thursday morning to that car park up there and discover you're all there, because that'll have ruined my oneliness, okay? You go find your own oneliness, right? And I don't want you all in the garden of the rectory either. Okay, yes. Yeah, just wait till midnight and go out and stand in the back garden, right? Make sure your neighbours aren't looking out, yeah? As you lie face down on the grass in the pouring rain. Or whatever Jesus did up those mountains. But can we go to the words of this, Alan? The Lord is my pace setter. I shall not rush. He makes me to stop and rest for quiet intervals. He provides me with images of stillness which restore my serenity. Don't move. Yeah. Which restore my serenity. Could you read that somewhere this week and then stop? And within seconds, your head will be filled with things. I've got to get here, got to do that. Oh, forgot that. That doesn't ease until you go past 30 seconds or a minute or 2 minutes. Because it's like it pops onto your mind and you put it away. Yeah, okay, I'll remember to do that. Don't need to think about that. And you start to put, then you go on. He leads me in ways of efficiency through calmness of mind, and his guidance is my peace. Even though I have a great many things to accomplish each day, I will not fret, for his presence is here. And stop. Oh, no, another line. His timelessness, his all importance, will keep me in balance. And then pause. We'll keep moving, because you're all anxious to get on to the next thing, aren't you? So, let's go on. By anointing where'd we get to? Oh, he prepares refreshment and renewal in the midst of my activity. By anointing my mind with his oils of tranquility, my cup of joyous energy overflows. Surely harmony and effectiveness shall be the fruits of my hours, for I shall walk in the pace of the Lord and dwell in his house forever. Now, I tried this during the week, the pace of the Lord. Is Catherine here? Is she out? Catherine told me, you sound like somebody from Stuartstown, which is where she's from, talking about the pace of the Lord. Right? Because we talk about the peace of the Lord, right? But how about if we introduce a new line into the liturgies of the Church of the Lord, of the Church of Ireland? The pace of the Lord be always with you. And you say, and also with you. Right? How about beginning to allow our lives to walk at his pace? And you know what? You might find the peace of the Lord as well.
Thank you for listening. To hear previous weeks and for more information, go to beaverparish.co.uk/sermons.